Hey lovers, welcome to TSPN. Welcome to the fourth installment of a not intentional multi-part series that we created here called The Masters. So we knew it'd take a while to get through, but after we started breaking it down, really understanding, there's a lot to this. And then of course, Scooter Braun signed that deal with UMG in the smack dab middle of what we're going through. So that was great timing for us to be talking about this. But if you have not caught parts 1 through 3, definitely go back. They are clearly labeled on our YouTube and on all of the podcast networks. The first part, we talked about the difference between Scott Borchetta and Scooter Braun and their relationships to Taylor, because it's very different. They do not have like parallel relationships as it pertains to her career. So just understanding how they came into play and who they are to Taylor is very important before we get into this episode. So please go back. And then part 2, we started the timeline. So Jesse did like 16 hours of research and went through essentially starting from the sale of Taylor's Masters until the end of 2020. So right when Evermore was released. And then in part 3, we went through from 2021. So right after Evermore was released all the way through present day. And so that included a lot of the re-recordings and things that have really happened as of late. And if you're just like extra into this content, there was an episode in between 2 and 3. I did it alone because Jesse wasn't available during that week. The majority of the episode is not really related to this, but at the end, there is a chunk where I talk about what happened most recently with the UMG and Hybe deal, because Hybe is the company, the mega corp that Scooter Braun is currently the CEO of the US leg of it. I think it's the American leg, so broader than the US, but that deal hitting the news cycle is crazy timing right now. So again, if you're just like, I can't get enough about this topic, that's a good one to touch as well. So let's now reel it up. We are today on the fourth and final installment. We've talked about the characters, we've gone through the timeline. Jesse is now going to lead the discussion. I've got my own little thoughts, but Jesse has done all the research and really kind of laid it out for us as far as what lyrics and songs has Taylor released during this time that really relate to this saga and that are part of the storytelling of what happened. One quick thing to touch on before we get into part 4 is a quick correction from part 3. So shout out to Ricky, who called this out in our YouTube comments, and we did want to make sure that we do clarify. Jesse was speaking a little off the cuff about the re-recordings and why they sounded just a little bit enhanced and different, and had said that Jack Antonoff produced Fearless Taylor's version. And I think you might even just kind of broadly spoken about him being involved in the re-recordings of the albums that predated his, you know, producer relationship with Taylor Swift. And so that is incorrect. He was part of a majority of those vault tracks on the re-recording, so the new songs that we hadn't heard yet. But Taylor did pull in a lot of the original producers and worked with a variety of people to really recreate the original sound that you would have heard on the first Masters. So again, just a quick kind of correction, just knowing that it was kind of a quick thing that you said, but it's a very important thing to clarify. So let's get right into part 4. And Jesse, I'm going to let you just drive. Let's see where this heads.
Okay. So this is my absolute favorite part of being a Swiftie for me is Taylor's lyrics.
Yep.
So I can gather a lot of information from her lyrics. Now, I know they're layered and I know she makes them difficult to understand sometimes. And sometimes we don't even know what they mean until a couple albums later. But when I always say go back to the lyrics, go back to the lyrics, because it's in the lyrics. So when I first started this series, I talked about Scott Borchetta and Scooter Braun, two totally different people. That's why you guys should listen to that first, because they're songs that are about those two men that are very different in structure and in lyrics. So Scott Borchetta is somebody that helped jumpstart Taylor's career. They had a 13-year father-daughter mentorship relationship, very close. And Scooter Braun was someone Taylor disliked from the beginning and never had a lot to do with each other except for him bullying her, manipulating her, and so on. So I'm going to start with Scooter Braun because those songs aren't as deep in the lyrics.
Yeah.
And they're filled with anger. Most of them are filled with just female rage, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to start with Mad Woman off Folklore. And these are songs I believe to be about Scooter, to be about Borchetta, to be about the Masters. You guys can interpret them any way you want. That's the beauty of Taylor's work, right?
Yeah, this is purely opinion, and it is not confirmed by Taylor or anyone on Taylor's team. It's just our interpretations.
Right. So in Mad Woman, I'm going to start with, what do you sing on your drive home? Do you see my face in the neighbor's lawn? Does she smile or does she mouth fuck you forever? Taylor did have a billboard of her new upcoming album, Lover, put in so that Scooter Braun would see her face on the way to his office every day. So that's what she's referring to in that line. And the song, I mean, if you guys have heard Mad Woman, it goes on, you know, every time you call me crazy, I get more crazy. And there's nothing like a mad woman. Now, and you'll poke that bear till her claws come out and you find something to wrap your noose around, and there's nothing like a mad woman. So you get that bear imagery of her in 2020. You know, I mean, when her work was sold, right?
Do you want to clarify the bear imagery then? Or do you?
So in 2020, Taylor took a picture in a bear costume. And whenever she brings up bear, like in Lavender Haze, the music video, she brought up blue bear. I look like a blue bear with her, like her mm-hmm. fur. Anytime she brings up bear in lyrics or anywhere else, I feel like there's some kind of unresolved anger issue, and it's probably pointing the Scooter.
Yeah, well, in the bear photo that you're referring to that was posted in 2020, I think it was at the end, and I think the caption was something like, it's been a weird year by 2020. You know, it was a weird year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's been weird. And that photo was her TikTok profile picture until Tortured Poets. Like,
yep.
Even through the Midnight's era, even through all the re-records. So, like, that's a big thing that she'll change, right? Whenever she's in a new era, she'll go to her Instagram and, you know, whatever other accounts, like, really the website, like, everything just rebrands for this new era. And TikTok continued to be that damn photo. And if you don't know, it's not like a bear costume, like a mascot. It's like a hood. It's obviously like maybe a onesie jumper that you zip up, and then the hood is up, and then the top of the hood, it's kind of like a kid's towel. You know how they make the mm-hmm. towels for like the different animals? You're a mom, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like that. So go look it up if you haven't, if this isn't ringing a bell. But to me, that was always so significant that it was that profile. I mean, that's such a huge decision. Why yeah. for 2 years? And to me, the fact that it went away with Tortured Poets says something.
It does. And I'm still, and I'll get to this later, but I'm still wondering if there's a deal for her to get her masters back at some point here. I've been calling this for years, but I think it's getting closer.
Do you think the bear is like gone now because she has her masters back?
Maybe. Or that deal is very close to happening.
We'll see.
Yeah. Okay, so now I breathe flames each time I talk, which reminds me of the dragons, right? My cannons all firing at your yacht. And this takes us back to the very first episode where Justin Bieber was hosting Punk'd and had Taylor on, and she pushed a button that he had her push, and it...
Okay, well, I'll paint a bigger story because I don't know if all our international listeners know what Punk'd is. So Punk'd was a prank show. And so essentially one person was the host. It was usually Ashton Kutcher, and then I'm sure other people did it, but Justin Bieber did it for a year. And the artist that was kind of the victim of the prank didn't know that there was a prank, right? So she goes over, Scooter Braun is in the episode for a hot minute, doesn't talk or anything, but you could clearly see him there. And then Justin's like, hey, Taylor, let's fire some fireworks off. And then he shoots a few out into the lake. And then that's where you're saying, like, she pushes the button. So he's like, do you want to push one? So it's like now her turn. And when she pushes the button, the fireworks light a yacht on fire.
Yep.
And she freaks out. That's the prank. Because she, you know, there's a wedding on it and they come swimming back to shore and everyone's panicked and she's crying. And it's cringe. Yeah. I'm like, was this entertainment television back in the early 2000s? I think it was like 2012. So I wouldn't say like it's not the type of thing that I look at now. And I'm like, that's like almost cruel. And yeah. Maybe not all of the punked pranks were that cruel, but you could just tell she's fucking freaking out. Mm-hmm. I would be too.
Yeah. Yeah. It was bad.
Yeah. So firing the cannons.
Now, this next part in Mad Woman could be, and this is what I mean when she layers things, this part I think could be about Kim and Kanye. So it says, and women like hunting witches too, doing your dirtiest work for you. It's obvious that wanting me dead, why can't Taylor come to the phone right now? Oh, because she's dead, has really brought you two together. And I think she's doing a callback, no pun intended, to the phone call that was recorded by Kim and edited to make it sound like she was crazy. So I think that that might have something to do with that.
I always thought that was Carly.
Really?
Yeah, because isn't Scooter her manager?
And he then was.
They started posting it on a yacht. Didn't they post on a yacht?
They did post a picture on a yacht together, but this is painting like a woman doing a work for a man.
Yeah, but we don't know what broke up their friendship. So doing your dirtiest work for you, maybe
it could
be. We know that when she sings Enclosure, I think, or there's a song where she talks about the words of a sister come back and whisper the truth she was not, or the proof she was not. I think about this is all speculative. I'm going wild into speculative town, but like, is it possible that she being best friends with Carly and Carly being managed by Scooter means that Carly was able to kind of be the mole for Scooter to get info on Taylor? So again, like women like hunting witches too, doing your dirtiest work for you, like potentially bringing Scooter info. And I'm not saying it's not like an operative situation. She didn't have like, you know, she wasn't meaning to, I'm sure, but it's like that was the tie that probably gave him info. I don't know. Again, speculation.
Yeah. And it could see, this is how people can interpret the lyrics differently too. Mm-hmm. Okay. So the last part of the song I want to talk about is when she gets into this bridge and she says, I'm taking my time because you took everything from me. Watching you climb over people like me. And I think that's in direct relation to how slowly she's releasing the re-records because she's taken her time to get him back, right? Then it goes into the master of spin, which he is. That's what he does for a living. He's a manager. He's a master of spin, right? Has a couple side flings, good wives always know. She should be mad, she'd be scathing like me, but no one likes a mad woman. So this is in direct relation to Scooter's wife, Yael Braun. And the next song we're gonna go to is kind of a part two of Mad Woman. So what she did is she basically called him out for being a liar and a cheater. And those are some pretty harsh words, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is confirmed in later songs, right?
It is. So I'm going to do a little jumping around so this makes sense. Mad Woman is on Folklore. We are going to go to Vigilante Shit. So Vigilante Shit, I think, is about Scooter Braun. Again, another mad, scathing song, right? Female rage.
Yep.
She starts right off the bat. Draw a cat eye sharp enough to kill a man. You did some bad things, but I'm the worst of them. Sometimes I wonder which one will be your last lie. They say looks can kill, and I might try. than I don't dress for women, I don't dress for men lately. I've been dressing for revenge. So she's at the point now where she's not just mad, she wants revenge. So I'm going to kind of skip a little bit down here. She needed cold, hard proof, so I gave her some. This is where I picture Yael being like, Taylor, you called my husband out for cheating, like literally said he had side flings. Do you even have proof? Right? That's kind of what I'm picturing here.
See, I've never pictured this conversation, but I picture this conversation for her being like, hey, you bitch, why would you say that about my husband?
Uh-huh. Could have gone down
and
like
then,
that.
And then she's like, you want proof? Yeah, I got exactly. proof.
Exactly. And I mean, I think it could have gone down any of those ways. She needed
probably between the two, honestly.
Yeah. She needed cold hard proof, so I gave her some. She had the envelope. Where do you think she got it from? Now she gets the house, gets the kids, gets the pride, which she did. Picture me thick as thieves with your ex-wife. And here's how I know this is about Yael and Scooter. Thick as thieves. Thieves is Scooter Braun's company. Okay? So she's letting us know in this lyric, that's what it's about. Because a lot of people think that this song is about Kanye and Kim, and it's not. It's about
Well, Scooter. The reason it's not about Kanye and Kim, it's funny you say thick as thieves, which is why I'm really excited to do Torture Poets analysis with you, because you're going to catch that little shit, which is very detailed. But the detail that I recall people talking about and I agree with, so just for context for newer Swifties, both Scooter and Kanye went through their divorces before Midnights, right? So like Kim and Kanye divorced and then Scooter and his wife divorced, right? And so when you hear this and you're like, she gets the house, gets the key, kids, gets the pride, whatever, you're like, okay, it's painting the divorce. Picture me, and it's driving in your Benz. That is not Kim Kardashian.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because a Benz is a nice car. Don't get me wrong. I do not drive a nice car, but I don't think Kim Kardashian's been seen out driving a Benz, but definitely that kind of level. So there you go. There's my more simplified analysis.
Yeah. I mean, I drive a minivan, so I'm sure yours is better than that. Yeah. And she looks so pretty driving in your Benz. Lately, she's been dressing for revenge. So this is 100%, I think, about Yael and Scooter.
Does Mercedes Benz make minivans?
I don't know.
I feel like that needs to be your goal. Like, get yourself a fancy van. My husband, he wants a minivan so bad. We're not going to have children. At least we're not planning on it. And I still think at some point we'll get a minivan because he wants one.
It's so easy. The doors slide. They don't fly open and hit the car next to you. And it's so low to the ground.
So much space. So much space. The vacuum built in. Like, we got dogs. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so... She goes on to say that the lady simply had enough. So Yael simply had enough. While he was doing lines and crossing all of mine, so now she's accusing him of doing drugs. Someone told his white collar crimes to the FBI. And she's like, money. Who do you think that is? You know, and he does. I'm not going to put this on record, but I have heard that there are some issues, legal issues going on with Scooter right now.
Oh, hello. We don't even, but if you guys are listening to this episode the day it releases, that's one thing. If you're listening to this in 6 months, I really feel like shit's about to come out with some of the stuff that's happening. So I will not get into it because, again, speculation, allegations, but yep. I think he's going to be part of the fall of the music industry. That's we're kind of feeling like it's about to happen.
Yep. A big part of this, too, is that when she says, I don't start shit, but I can tell you how it ends. Don't get sad. Get even. So she didn't say mad. She said, don't get sad. Get even. So on the weekends, I don't dress for friends. Lately, I've been dressing for revenge. What she's saying there is that on the weekends, where is she? What is she doing? She's at a different stop every weekend, usually for the Eras tour. And she's in her costumes, up on stage, dressing for revenge. Because with each show that goes by, She's that's a step towards reclaiming her work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right, because she says, don't get sad, get even. So she's like, yeah, I'm allowed to be a mad woman. Like, I'm not going to say don't get mad. Like, the whole concept is that she's mad.
Yep. Okay, so the next one I want to talk to in regards to Scooter Braun is karma. So I think that karma has a lot to do with her masters, but I think it has a lot to do with Scooter and maybe a little bit of Borchetta. But what she says in here, and I keep my side of the street clean, which is another reference to drugs, you know, as well.
Yeah, I had to Google that. Like, everyone jokes about the vocabulary that, you know, you got to look up what a word means. And sometimes there are phrases, and it's not, you know, being smart or dumb if you have to look it up. It's more just like culturally and just what you're used to. I didn't realize mm-hmm. it was drugs, though.
The only reason I'm knowing some of this stuff is because I was a drug counselor for 13 years and I was in the thick of the thick and, you know, just.
That's a really good point. She knows the street drug terms.
I know. Yeah. I know a lot about it. Yeah. So it can also mean, though, that she's just not pulling shady stuff and that she's doing mm-hmm. things lawfully, right?
Exactly. Well. That's what I think that now that I'm thinking about it, that's what I recall with the searching of it is it's like, I've got my shit in order when it comes to like being fair and legal, probably.
Yeah. So the minute I realized this song was about Scooter is when she says Spider Boy, King of Thieves. There we go again. So Spider Boy, three syllables. Scooter Braun, three syllables. King of Thieves. He has a company called Thieves. Weave your little webs of opacity. My pennies made your crown. Ouch.
Trick okay, can me. I just say, when I heard this song, I thought she said my panties made your crown.
We should do an episode of like lyrics that we've heard wrong.
Like, I still hear it. My panties made your crown. And I'm like, what the fuck? Okay, keep going. I'm sorry.
Okay, so she says, this is the best for me, okay? Because a lot of people go right past this. Trick me once, trick me twice. You sold my work once, you sold my work twice, right? Don't you know that cash ain't the only price? Here is where I think Taylor is going to regain her master recordings. And I don't think she's going to pay cash for them. I think she has a deal laid out with Shamrock or Disney or whatever you want to call it through the Eras Tour, through a film, through a documentary that she's going to earn back the masters without cash.
Yeah. Kind of like her original re-signing would have been with Big Machine Records. You mm-hmm. do more, you earn more. But in that scenario, I think she did know. She had mentioned that in one of the posts about knowing that there was going to be a sale. And so she didn't want to sign off on a future that she wasn't sure what it would look like. But I wonder how common that is. That might be more regular than you think about. Like, okay, it's like sweat equity. The more time you put in, then you can basically earn back shit you've done.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she's going to make, I mean, if she isn't already, Disney a lot of flipping money. Long Pond, obviously, the Eras Tour movie moving there. I really hope, like, Reputation. Let's get a Disneyland theme park for Taylor. Like, there's so many opportunities.
I would go back to Disney for that as of right now.
I would vacation there every year. Yeah. Every year.
That would be awesome. But here's, I mean, another reason I think, like, is Taylor ever going to let that go? Like, never getting her masters back? Maybe she's just doing it through the re-records, but I can still see her wanting those master recordings back. They're like her children.
Here's the thing. If she does ever give it up, she's not just going to give it up and we're not going to know about it. It's going to be her writing lyrics about the perception looking back of like, I wish I didn't care that much. Like, I think about that. I mean, fuck, where when I went to college, like I thought I was going to go like a big, you know, uppity university. And I just went to a state school. And I remember thinking, God, if I would have known that this was where I was going to end up, I wouldn't have cared so much or tried so hard or stressed out so much. And so like, I'm sure everyone has an example like that, where it's like, you look back at a time in your life, you're like, God, I was really holding on a little too strong. I was way too invested. So, like, again, if she does ever give it up, which I don't think she will, I agree with you. But if she did, we would know about it because that would be a theme of, like, looking back, I shouldn't have cared so much. But she should care. So I'm not saying that.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so in Karma, there is a part where she says, step by step from town to town. Okay, again, talking about the Eras Tour. This has something to do with regaining ownership of her masters. Okay, that's what she's doing, step by step, from town to town. Sweet like justice, Karma is a queen. Karma takes all my friends to the summit. I don't believe we know what that means yet. I think there could be something called summit something that just is not out yet. But I do think that will come to fruition at some point.
Listen, yeah, well, the summit's lyrics. Like the top, right? Like you, the summit, you could be like it could be like the top of the charts, you know, yep. Like it could be a variety of things. If it's not like a physical, place that she references.
Yeah. So that's all I have on Karma. The next one that I want to talk about really quick and touch on is the lakes from Folklore. There's a couple things in the lakes that I just wanted to point out. She says, what should be over burrowed under my skin, meaning like she had lost her masters, but it burrowed under her skin. It kept bothering her. In heart, stopping waves of hurt. I've come too far to watch some name-dropping sleaze, which is Scooter, right? She wouldn't say that about Scott Borchetta.
Okay. No, I agree.
Tell me, what are my words worth? Now, that is a play on words. It's words worth. What are they worth, like, to you? How much are they worth to you? But also, Wordsworth is one of her favorite Lakes poets. She's even gone to his grave several times. So that's where this is like her lyricism at its finest for me.
And if you are just listening to this and it's not the week that we release this episode, then just know that we did film this right before Tortured Poets came out. So when it comes to any of these references, like, I feel like the Lakes is like a precursor of Tortured Poets. So I wonder if some of what you're saying with that song or just some of the Wordsworth type deal, like, I mean, maybe all of Tortured Poets is a Wordsworth, you know, reference. I don't know. But I just wanted to kind of notate that because I feel like if we were to do this 6 months from now, we might be able to take it another step further.
Yeah. And I am wondering how much of this is going to change for me after I hear Tortured Poets. Like, it may take on, like, the Lakes might take on a new meaning for me, parts of it.
Like, well, and that's why we needed to film. We need to, like, stamp it in time, get this out before, because if not, it would take Jessie another 3 months to, like, get her thoughts together and come up with, you know, and same with me. But I do think there's just a lot that might be recontextualized.
Yeah, in the Lakes, The Lakes is one of my favorite songs just because I've always loved poetry. I like to write poetry. That's why I'm so excited about this album. And I am such a nerd with her lyrics. But she also writes, with my calamitous love and insurmountable grief. So she's talking about how she's bathing in cliffside pools with the love of her life at the time, Joe, with her insurmountable grief. That's like two clashing themes in one sentence. So as far as we know right now, the grief is the loss of the masters. Could be the loss of something else. We don't know, but that's what I'm going off of right now. Okay, so the next song that I believe Scooter shows up in is one of the biggest ones I want to talk about, and that's Mastermind. So, Mastermind, for me, right away when I heard it, I thought, this song is not about a man. She is not putting a track 13 on Midnights, a song called Mastermind, about her locking down a man. It's just not Taylor. Like, that's not what it is, right?
I thought it was about a man, but that's all right.
Okay.
I just took her at her words.
So I want you guys to listen to this, okay? So it starts out, once upon a time, the planets and the fates and all the stars aligned. You and I ended up in the same room at the same time. I believe that this is Shamrock Holdings and Taylor Swift, because it goes on to say, and the touch of a hand lit the fuse. Holding, like holding hands, Shamrock Holdings.
Lit or shaking hands.
Yep. Yep.
Like maybe they met and they shook hands.
Yep. Lit a fuse of a chain reaction of counter moves, because at this point, Taylor's playing chess with her work. She's trying to be ahead of everybody. To assess the equation of you, checkmate, I couldn't lose. She goes on to say, what if I told you none of it was accidental, and the first night that you saw me, nothing was going to stop me. I laid the groundwork, and then just like clockwork, the dominoes cascaded in a line. Now, Scooter Braun sold her masters to Shamrock Holdings. He said in the deal, if you reach out to Taylor at any point in this transaction, it's off. The deal's off. Well, they did. They did reach out to Taylor via letter. I believe they were in the same room. They talked. There was talk of a deal. And Scooter still sold them. But what ended up happening at the time, and we haven't heard about this since 2020, that Taylor was going to move forward with doing her re-records and not work with Shamrock, because even if she did, Scooter would still get the royalties. But she said, if you're ever free of Scooter, let me know. It's 2024. Anything could happen at this point. Mm-hmm. But it goes on. What if I told you I'm a mastermind and now you're mine? Mastermind. Masters are mine. Now you're mine. When I listened to it that way, it blew my mind. Like, it was all by design because I'm the mastermind. She's basically saying, and now you're mine. She lost them.
Okay. If I look dead in the face, I'm just thinking. And if you're listening on Spotify, I'm just, my brain is like twisting. I've heard this before too. You've fucking told me this. And whenever you're bringing it up, I'm just playing the song in my head thinking like, yep. Yeah. The chain of reaction of counter moves to assess the equation.
Checkmate. I couldn't lose. And I don't think I've gone through the whole thing with you though. So that's probably why you're processing.
Yeah.
I mean, I've done TikToks on this, but okay. You see, all the wisest women had to do it this way, because we were born to be the pawn in every lover's game. What she's referring to there is in the Lover video. In the what they call the Fearless Room, she's playing, there is a chessboard. Now, when she says in this song, she says it like in every lover's game. She says it weird. She's referring to Lover, her first owned album. Not a lover's game back and forth. Yes. Born to be the
pawn.
You play
stupid games, you win stupid prizes. Yep. Don't you know that cash ain't the only price? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so it kind of goes through, what if I told you none of it was accidental, and the first night you saw me, I knew I wanted your body. She's not talking about someone's physical body. She's talking about her body of work. I laid the groundwork, and then just like clockwork, the dominoes cascaded in a line. What if I told you I'm a mastermind? Okay. No one wanted to play with me as a little kid, so I've been scheming like a criminal ever since. To make them love me and make it seem effortless. This is the first time I felt the need to confess. And I swear I'm only cryptic and Machiavellian because I care. So she's obviously being cryptic about it, but you can see where she's being cryptic. You know? This is where I feel like she talks about the fans or the Swifties. So I told you none of it was accidental, and the first night you saw me, nothing was going to stop me. I laid the groundwork, and then with a wide smirk on your face, you knew the entire time, you knew that I'm a mastermind. And now you're mine. Yeah, all you did was smile because I'm a mastermind. I think that she just knows her fans back her, and that they just kind of know. And this song,
we do know.
Yeah, this song ebbs and flows for me a little bit, but you'll never be able to convince me it's not about our masters.
Well, and here's some good context. So if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, shit, I never thought of it that way. And don't recontextualize the song for yourself. It's kind of like when she came out with the playlist and the stages of grief. It doesn't mean that the song means something else if it meant something to you initially, because let's be honest, my husband did not have a choice. We were getting married. He was going to be my boyfriend. He's happy and in love, and he went along with it. But I'm the motherfucking mastermind. So whenever I heard that song, I just laughed because I'm being like kind of facetious right now. Like, obviously, it's not really like that. But I remember at one point he was like, I don't think I ever asked you to be my girlfriend. You just decided one day that you're my girlfriend. Like, he's like, you know, there was no discussion about it, you know? And so it's one of those things where when I listen to this song, I love it because I'm like, yeah, like, bitch, you were mine. I knew the whole time. You didn't know, but like, we fell in love. So like, if you have a similar relationship to a song that Taylor's written, whether it's about love, grief, anything like that, if she's writing about her masters, it doesn't take away the fact that she did write it in a way that wasn't so fucking literal. If she was not such a great songwriter, these songs would be so literal. They would be hard to relate to. You would be like, that's cool, moving on, right? So like, the idea that the lyrics do transcend her story is what's important.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and it's different for everybody. Like, this next one I talk about is probably going to be a little controversial with, because I think that people have a lot of different viewpoints on this song. And it may even change for me after Tortured Poets comes out. But for right now, I think The Great War is a song that lays out step by step how she's going to get her masters back, which is kind of mind blowing a little bit.
I'm gonna have to think on that one.
Okay,
that's one of my favorite songs. I don't know why. I can't explain it to you.
What do you think of when you hear it?
I think of relationships.
Okay,
not my own, but just like when I imagine. First off, I just think that the imagery of the war, with the way she ties it back to love, I also at times can see it being very much about what happened in 2016 leading into the rep era and how that was the Great War and that we got through it with her, because she talks about, you wrote peace treaties, right? And I closed curtains, drank my poison all alone. Mm-hmm. That, you know, she went into hiding, and she even talks in Reputation about drinking wine. And she closed us out as fans, but we were there the whole time for her. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, she's like, I laid my weapons down and realized that. I'm just literally paraphrasing. I cannot quote the song, but you're about to. So let's go.
And this could be many different things, really. I mean, it could be about that. It could be about Joe. What I hear is things about her masters and her work. And the only songs I'm doing lyrical analysis for you guys right now are songs that I think are about Scooter Braun, her masters, or Scott Borchetta, because that's what we're talking about. So it starts out, my knuckles were bruised like violets. Speak now. Sucker punching walls, cursed you as I sleep talked. So obviously upset at Borchetta or Braun or whoever. Spineless in my tomb of silence, because they took her voice. Tore your banners down, took the battle underground. Which I think means that she tried to figure this out without people knowing. And it didn't. It had to go public. And maybe it was ego swinging. Maybe it was her. I don't understand that part right now, because it could be about something else. Flashes of the battle come back to me in a blur. So all that bloodshed, crimson clover, I look at that as red. And I also look at that as clover, as in shamrock. Shamrock Holdings.
Ooh. Well, and like, if it's crimson, if it's blood covered, then mm-hmm. It's like, you're not, your hands aren't clean. Right. Shamrock.
Right. Uh-oh. Sweet dream was over. So she thought her whole dream of owning the masters were over. My hand was the one you reached for. Shamrock Holdings. All throughout the Great War. Always remember, tears on the letter. I read you guys the letter that she wrote to Shamrock talking about how she couldn't work with them. Mm-hmm. It was a literal letter. I vowed not to cry anymore if we survived the Great War. Then it goes on to say you drew up some good faith treaties, as in you drew up some contracts, right? I drew curtains closed, drank my poison all alone because, here it comes, you said I have to trust more freely, but diesel is desire, that's Scooter Braun. You were playing with fire, meaning they weren't supposed to be talking to her. And she's saying you're playing with fire. Because it's Scooter with Braun. And maybe it's the past that's talking, screaming from the crypt, telling me to punish you for things you never did, so I justified it. So Shamrock Holdings never did anything to her.
Yeah.
Then it goes on to say, all that bloodshed, Crimson Clover, the bombs were close. And my hand was the one you reached for all throughout the Great War, so it kind of changes a little bit. Always remember, the burning embers. I vowed not to fight anymore if we survive the Great War.
You bitch. Honestly, you just like completely changed the song for me.
I'm sorry. I know. I knew it would. It gets better too.
Oh, damn it. We're not done. Hold on. Well, let me just process for a moment. Okay, so let's pause because I'm really thinking that you're correct, that this is probably about that. But I want to just tie it back to some things that also tie to the kind of falling out during the Reputation era. So like, obviously, we talked about, you know, I drew curtains closed, drank my poison all alone. Like I retreated during that time instead of, you know, being out. And I feel like when you talk about Spineless in My Tomb of Silence, so we think about in 2016, she disappeared for a year. She was silent. And then the very first imagery where she reappears is in a tomb, which is in the Look What You Made Me Do music video opener. So she was spineless in her tomb of silence. I don't know. That's why I've always kind of thought that lyric tied.
Yeah, that definitely could be, for sure. So I'm going to jump back into the Great War where we left off. And now we're at the point where it says it turned into something bigger. Somewhere in the haze got a sense I'd been betrayed. So she felt a sense she might have been betrayed during this deal with Shamrock. Your finger on my hairpin triggers. Soldier down on that icy ground looked up at me with honor and truth. This part, I think, is about Scott Borchetta. Broken and blue, so I called off the troops. Remember how many times she enlisted her fans during this?
Mm-hmm.
Several.
Yep.
That was the night I nearly lost you. I really thought I lost you. And I think she's talking to her masters.
Yeah.
Now, this could be about Joe, right? Going into torture poets, maybe. But then it comes to this part. We can plant a memory garden, that's the re-records. Say a solemn prayer, place a poppy in my hair. There's no morning glory. It was war. It wasn't fair. And we will never go back. So to me, a memory garden is her re-records. It's not the real thing.
Yep. I agree with you.
This song is definitely telling a story because even in the chorus parts, it's telling you something different is happening. So plan a memory garden. Now we go to that bloodshed Crimson Clover. The worst was over. My hand was the one you reached for all throughout the Great War. Always remember, we're burned for better. I vowed I would always be yours because we survived the Great War. Now, I also want to say how much plant and flower imagery is in this song. I mean, you have violets, you have clover, you have morning glories, Poppies. I think that might be it. And also, did you guys know, because I looked this part up, this part here, we can plant a memory garden. Say a solemn prayer, place a poppy in my hair. There's no morning glory. It was war. It wasn't fair. Did you know morning glories, if you put them under your pillow at night, you should have good dreams?
Is that a flower?
Yeah, it's a morning glory flower. Okay, so we have talked about songs that I believe to be about Scooter Braun, some that are about the Masters, and now we are going to move on to Scott Borchetta, and I will show you how different her lyrics and her songs are, I believe, to be about him than how they are about Scooter Braun. So we're going to start with a real hard-hitting one, and that's My Tears Ricochet. Okay? We gather here. We line up, weeping in a sunlit room, which is painting a picture of a funeral, a wake, right? And if I'm on fire, you'll be made of ashes too. Even on my worst day, did I deserve, babe, all the hell you gave me? Because I loved you, I swear I loved you till my dying day. Now you have to imagine she's not talking to a lover in this. She's putting it into context that a lot of us can relate to really well, because we can't really relate to being betrayed by our record producer, right? Not a lot of us can relate to that. So she's going to put this in themes of divorce, themes of death, in order to get it out of her and onto paper, but so it's something that we understand.
Yeah, and you called him her record producer. I mean, lifelong mentor. Yeah. At that point. I mean, career-long mentor, not life. But, you know, like, there's – it's more than that on paper. But – and I do think, honestly, I feel like some of that – some of these songs we're going to talk about, you could relate in a professional way. Like, yeah. If you've worked for a company for 10 years and they fucking betray you. I mean, even in It's Time to Go, she says, when the son of the boss gets the job that you wanted. I don't know. Again, I can't quote the lyrics unless I'm singing it. But yeah, that's there's ties, but yes, divorce and betrayal is very, very much themed.
Definitely. And the two songs that I think are the most gut-wrenching about Borchetta are My Tears Ricochet and Tolerate It. So I'm gonna go on here on My Tears Ricochet. And I didn't have it in myself to go with Grace. So she's saying, I didn't leave Big Machine Records the way I probably should have. It probably wasn't a very good break at that point. And you're the hero flying around saving face, and we all saw him doing that if you watch part 2 and 3. And if I'm dead to you, why are you at the wake? Cursing my name, wishing I stayed with Big Machine Records. Look at how my tears ricochet.
So she gathers stones, never knowing what they'll mean, some to throw, some to make a diamond ring, meaning, you know, words can hurt in a way. I didn't want to have to haunt you, but what a ghostly scene, which she's had a lot of haunting and ghost imagery lately. A lot.
I feel like that's going to carry into TTPD too.
Yes, especially with the ghost vinyl.
Oh, yeah.
You wear the same jewels that I gave you as you buried me. So probably jewelry she's bought him, or, you know, clothes or gifts.
I think it's just money.
Maybe.
You know, because if you think about like Cleopatra and the Egyptians, how they're buried with their jewels and that, it's like jewels is a representation of the money. So you are wearing, you know, the crown. You're up on a pedestal because I put you there, kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Because when I'd fight, you used to tell me I was brave. So when she would fight things, he was the one in her corner telling her she was brave. And if I'm dead to you, why are you at the wake? Cursing my name, wishing I stayed with Big Machine Records. Look at how my tears ricochet. This part kills me. And I can go anywhere I want, just not home. Big Machine Records was her home. That's the only place she can't go. He was her home.
Well, and her music and her work, that's all her home, right?
Yep. And you can aim for my heart, go for blood, but you would still miss me in your bones. And I still talk to you when I'm screaming at the sky. And when you can't sleep at night, you hear my stolen lullabies, my songs.
That's what nails it in the coffin for me. No pun intended with this song being about death. But the stolen lullabies is clear.
It is. It is. Okay, so the second song I believe to be about Scott Borchetta is Tolerate It. And it starts off, I sit and watch you reading with your head low. So I can just see her across the desk and him reading her lyrics or her songs right off the bat. And just her waiting to see what he's going to say. I wake and watch you breathing with your eyes closed. Again, she's putting in those pieces so it'll connect with us. I sit and watch you and notice everything you do or don't do. You're so much older and wiser. That gives it the Scott Borchetta to me.
Yeah. Well, we know that's not Joe because Joe is not older.
Right.
Nor is he wiser. I don't know. TBD. TBD on the TP, TPTD, TTD.
TBD.
Do be determined.
I wait by the door like I'm just a kid. Use my best colors for your portrait. So that's Scott Borchetta because he has said multiple times in interviews that he sees colors, people in colors, and songs in colors. So it's almost like painting a portrait for him. So that's another connection. Lay the table with the fancy shit. I give you all my best work. And watch you tolerate it. If it's all in my head, tell me now. Tell me I've got it wrong somehow. I know my love should be celebrated, but you tolerate it. And I believe this is how she was feeling during Rep and the Rep Stadium Tour when he kind of just let her be and let more other people deal with her in her tour. And he was mentoring and helping new artists. And I think that's where she got kind of like, what are you doing? You know?
Yeah, I don't know. I saw an interview, I think it was the Grammy interview when she was doing, it's like at the Grammy Museum ahead of the 1989 release where she was sitting there like with her laptop and just playing it and stuff. And when you watch that back and she's talking through like kind of how she got to 1989 and walking through her eras. And when she talks about her label, there's a little tiny bit of distaste that you can like sense now where like in the past, it's like, whatever, she's just being a little bit like stubborn and getting her way finally. But like looking back, you're like, maybe it did exist even before that. Maybe Rep was kind of the falling apart of it, to be honest.
Well, she says it right in Bejeweled that she wasn't in the top five anymore. And Scott Borchetta talks a lot about his top five.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's interesting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So she pulled that right from that.
So it's not MySpace?
Yeah. No.
I mean, it is for us. Again, tying it back to us.
All right, I'm going to kind of jump here a little bit. While you were out building other worlds, where was I? Where's that man who'd throw blankets over my barbed wire? So he was kind of the one that did that, right? She had the rough edges, and he's the one who always was there to help her out. I made you my temple, my mural, my sky, going back to his portraits and his colors. Now I'm begging for footnotes in the story of your life. Drawing hearts in the byline, always taking up too much space or time. And she does this. She says that on tour on the table where she hits the vase. And that's the imagery that she gives. But what would you do if I break free and leave us in ruins? Leave Big Red Machine.
Nope. Big Machine Records.
Big Machine Records. Big Red Machine is an album.
Yes.
Okay. No, it's not an album. It's a band. Big Red Machine is a band.
And it is a Tuesday before we leave for South Carolina, and we are losing our damn minds. Yeah, so for those I don't know, Big Red Machine is Aaron Dessner, the National, or is Aaron Dessner?
And Bon Iver.
Bon Iver, thank you. It's their band. That's what Renegade comes from. What's the other one she sings on that?
Birch.
There you go. Okay, so Big Red Machine is a band. Big Machine Records is a record company. She breaks free and leaves us in ruin. She's breaking away from the record company. Take it away, Jesse.
Yep. Gain the weight of you, then lose it. Believe me, I could do it. If it's all in my head, tell me now. She almost, wants him to say, don't go, beg mm-hmm. her not to go. But in the end, he doesn't. So that's tolerated. As you can tell right now, a lot deeper cuts for Borchetta than Bronn. Bronn is more anger.
Yeah. And again, this is alleged. This is our opinions. Like, if you don't agree with this, that is totally fine. That is totally fine. Even Jesse and I disagree about some of it. It's not, you know, we're not scientists of her lyrics. Like, it's just our mm-hmm. analysis.
No, it's like one of the most, it's one of the most fun things for me to do is dissect her lyrics.
Totally. And I think that's the point. And I think that's why she's such a great artist, is because there's probably more than one inspiration behind most of her songs.
Yeah. There's a lot in Bejeweled. I mean, if you guys want to kind of go through Bejeweled with the lens of her leaving, I mean, I can reclaim the land. I can do the re-records, mm-hmm. you know, unless they're in your top five. So in You're On Your Own, Kid, I'm not going to go through that totally, but I do feel like there is a passage in here that's directed at Scott Borchetta, and it's the one where she says, from sprinkler splashes to fireplace ashes, I gave my blood, sweat, and tears for this. So in an article he did, he said he gave his blood, sweat, and tears for this. So she pulled that and put it in here so that we knew it would be about him.
Do you remember when that article was, or any context there?
Yep, I have it. Okay, I don't have the date, but it's, wait. No, I don't have the date of the article, but it's when he's talking about racing cars, because he has a lot to do with like NASCAR and racing cars. And he says, I opened Big Machine on September 1st, 2005, so I knew that was going to be my last race. Borchetta retired from racing as he put all his blood, sweat, and tears into creating the now massive Big Machine label group.
I could see where she might be bitter about that too, of like, if there's an article saying like he put his blood, sweat, and tears into creating the label, and she really is the foundational artist that started that label. Again, I don't pretend to know who else is on Big Machine, so I know there's other artists that have great and reputable careers, but Taylor Swift was the kind of behemoth of that label.
For sure. For sure. Hoax is up. It's kind of up in the air a little bit now that TTPD is coming out. I do feel like some of that might be about Joe. But then again, when she says, my best laid plan, your sleight of hand, my barren land, I am ash from your fire. She could be referring to losing masters, which are like her children, when she says my barren land.
Yeah, the Torture Poets Department is such an interesting introduction, because if you're listening to this ahead of Friday's episode, when we meet with KJ, we actually talk about that a little bit, where essentially a lot of the ways in which Joe and her relationship developed over time, there were tons of songs that could have been breakup songs that were very easily tied to her masters. So for people who maybe aren't big Swifties, who say, oh, she only writes breakup songs, like, obviously a lot of her discography and lyrics are bigger than just the breakups, but the way that she kind of masters the work makes it relatable for not just a breakup, a loss, a disappointment at work, a disappointment by your mother, by your father, by a good friend. Like, it's grief, it's disappointment, especially Folklore Nevermore times, right? And now Tortured Poets Department, we're guessing. But I say all that to say that, like, we may find out through Tortured Poets a little bit more about some of these songs that we've just easily attributed to being about the masters and the loss of her work, because at the time we thought they had a solid, steady, ongoing relationship. And so there was nothing to tell us otherwise, so we wouldn't have assumed otherwise. But now that things are getting really fucking rocky, if I'm being honest, like, some of the media and some of the stuff that, like, they're not squashing, and I mean, again, if you're watching this like a week from now, you know all the tea and you're like, yeah, it makes sense. But just know that when we're recording this, this is pre-Tortured Poets, which is why we're really pushing to get this out before, because a lot of this stuff may change. And so we just wanted to kind of like timestamp it. Like, this is what we thought was about the masters.
Yeah. And that could change after we hear TTPD.
It could all change.
Have a whole new outlook.
It will take us months to re-kind of contextualize everything, too.
She ties songs together through the decades. So she might have a line that has something to do with a song three albums ago. Like, that's how good she is. And then it's like, oh, that has to do with that. Personally, and I know this is going to be the most controversial one, I think Happiness is about her relationship with Scott Borchetta. She writes it as like a divorce. And I think that's how she makes it appeal to the masses. But when she says things like, when a good man hurts you and you know you hurt him too, that right away gives me a flag of, okay, Borchetta.
7 years in heaven, right? Didn't she say something about 7 years? Although, yep. No, they were together for more than 7 years. Her and Borchetta.
I think she did change some things up to make it, like, relatable. Like she says, but right now I'm down in it. All the years I've given is just shit we're dividing up.
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, it could have started as, because Folklore was very story, right? She talks about how it's fiction / nonfiction. There's going to be a lot more that comes out with that. But, like, it could have started with her, because even with Death by a Thousand Cuts, she watched a movie. She wrote that song kind of based on the feelings of the movie, right? And so maybe she was like experiencing something that was divorce themed. And then she realized how much it tied with her feelings of loss with the masters. And that's why it really still retained a lot of the divorce elements. But like to your point, there's some lyrics that are definitely relatable for her in both aspects likely.
Yeah. Like even here it says, in disbelief, I can't face reinvention. I haven't met the new me yet. And maybe at that point in time, she didn't know what she was going to do. She says, there'll be happiness after you, but there was happiness because of you. Both of these things can be true. Then, past the blood and bruise, past the curses and cries. That reminds me of the Great War. Bruise like violets. Cursed you from the crypt. Like, curse you while I sleep talked, you know, that's like what I just said before, tying in lyrics. Yeah, I think that you guys can probably go through this and look at it through that lens.
Yeah, I think, well, let's touch though on the controversial point of that one is that it is sexual in nature, right? I pull your body into mine every goddamn night. So Jesse is in no way saying that there's some sexual relation in that relationship between those two. It's just that some of the lyrics from that song and the themes of the loss are definitely relatable, whether Taylor meant it or not. There's an argument to be made that the loss of the masters is part of the kind of theme behind that song.
Yep.
And guys, I do want to say this is not all encompassing. There are going to be songs that we missed, right? This is something that has been very important to Taylor over the last several years. And so I guarantee there's almost a lyric about it in almost every song, right? It's a thread of what she's going through right now. It is what she's fighting to reobtain. So if we miss something, you can leave it in the comments. That's fine. But like, don't be harping on us for missing it. I promise we know. This wasn't our, you know, our goal is not to be all encompassing of our whole discography and going through everything. We just wanted to give really good examples of how over the last several years, especially since the sale of her masters, she's used her lyrics and used her songwriting to help us hear the story of how it's impacting her and what she's going through. And again, Tortured Poet's going to give us a whole new scope of that. So we could even do like a part five in like 5 or 6 months after we get through. I mean, this week's been crazy. We are mentally unwell. There's like way too much happening. So we wanted to give you guys that nugget. So definitely listen back to those songs. And we wanted to get out before Tortured Poets because of some of the nature of it. So just kind of thinking about those breakup songs and stuff in that way, listening for things like Stolen Lullabies and Tears on a Letter. I don't know. And that if she says Shamrock, Jesse will literally like, it will be the lottery ticket for her, really.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else to add?
I don't. I'm excited for Tortured Poets.
I know. Oh my gosh. It's going to be a huge week. So we appreciate everyone for sticking out for the four parts and four and a half, if you count that little mini part that I did. And we will definitely be pivoting,
right? It's tortured poets all day, all night, starting from here until the foreseeable future. And then she's going back on tour. And then what the fuck's going to happen in Paris? Because there's all these themes about Paris. So like, literally, we're just going to, like, Jesse and I are going to jump on the train, buckle up, and it is a high-speed rail, and we don't know where we're headed, okay? So just follow along with us. Keep touching base on our socials. We got TikTok, Instagram. We're on YouTube at TS Pod Network. TSPodNetwork.com, guys. Make sure you're following everywhere that you can, giving us 5 stars and tortured poets. It feels weird. Like, I feel like I'm like dismissing for like, I don't know, like Christmas break or something. I don't know. It feels weird.
It's going to be a different Taylor Swift is going to have more in her discography. It's going to be different after Friday.
I feel like we could do like, this is me before tortured poets. Like, it's going to change a lot of our perspective. So,
yes.
So yeah, we love you guys. We appreciate you for sticking around, and we'll see you on the flip side. Bye.
Bye.